For August the 24th, 2018, we talk about the Sekiro release date announcement, Dead Cells, and we ask you which game sequel most and least improved on its predecessors. Welcome to Level 254. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Dennis and Ben. I almost amalgamated all of your names together.
Dennis. Denbis.
Yeah.
Somehow I like Denbis better.
Denbis is good. Now all we need is a
that'll be when we go Voltron style,
or if we find a malfunctioning teleporter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so David, you are in a different place now.
Yeah, so I got a new job and moved out to New York City.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's been an adventure. It's kind of funny because I was living in right in the middle of Chinatown, which both you know, is a place where every single store sells fireworks and also where there's tons of tourists. So there's, you know, very, very commotion. Whereas on the other hand, I'm currently in the financial district of Manhattan.
Oh, so it empties out every night at 6 o'clock.
Right. So I think I'm the one person who moved to New York City and was kind of uncomfortable by, like, the lack of commotion.
Gosh, this city's dead.
But it is really interesting. I feel like this is the most, like, stereotypical thing to say, but it's interesting seeing all the history and stuff like that. I'm a couple blocks from the New York Stock Exchange, which is apparently across the street from where George Washington was sworn in as president.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like
the federal building, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Which is right next to the Trump building, so that's less good, but.
So, oh, yeah, you're down in the financial district. If I mail you a dozen eggs, could you go throw it at the bowl?
Tell
you what, I'll mail you 2 dozen eggs. You throw one of the dozen, and then you keep the other for yourself. You fry them bad boys up, scramble them.
We can make this work. So I have, well, one thing that is. I don't know. I feel like maybe this is something that's now, like, known, but to me, it's sort of like those things where they'll show you, like, pictures of the pyramid, and then they'll zoom out, and you'll realize that it's literally, like, right outside of Cairo.
Right, right.
I feel like there's almost, like, an opposite thing with the bowl, where, like, it's actually not particularly near the stock exchange.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, like, it's on, like, some other, like, side street, and I've...
Oh, it's really south compared to Wall Street, yeah. It's down closer to what? To Battery Park.
Right, exactly. So, which is, I don't know, it's just kind of interesting. it's also, I mean, it makes sense, but it's also kind of entertaining or weird or something. You know, obviously, lots of tourists around, you know, a lot of them, you know, taking the pictures you'd expect, you know, Wall Street, you know, there's, like I said, at the federal building, there's a huge, like, I don't know, like, double life-size statue of George Washington. So, you know, stuff like that.
As but featured also, in the ending of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah.
Continue,
but you also see a fair number of people taking pictures of the Trump building, which is kind of funny.
Mm.
I mean, you know, it makes sense, but it's also still kind of weird.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
But, assholes can travel as well. Assholes yes. can be tourists as well.
Well, yeah. See, actually, from what I can tell, I think, you know, you can't tell because the city is so, you know, incredibly multicultural and a melting pot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think actually most of them are foreign tourists.
Yeah.
Which again, you know, that makes sense. You know, seeing.
Yeah.
You know, I would want a picture of you know, a building named after, I don't know, Angela Merkel or someone.
Yeah, president's still the president. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I thought you were going to say they sounded like hate pictures to me.
Versus... no.
Oh, well, you know.
Also, if they were wasting actual film, I would probably look sideways a little bit more, but like, digital photo, it's basically free. Yeah, well, congratulations. Had you been to New York before?
So basically I did a family vacation once that we left out of New York,
mm-hmm.
but it was very much just like we got there and were there for like an hour or two. We went and saw like Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you've got a whole wide city in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was only committed to live there for 3 months. So who knows if this still holds true. You know, when I was there, it was like, you know, fuck feeling any kind of aversion to doing something touristy. Like that stuff is there because it's cool. So like I went into, I'm going to spend a couple days at the Natural History Museum. In fact, right. I did that with my brother, you know, mm-hmm. when my family was in town, we went to Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty Island, et cetera. We even just like rode the Staten Island Ferry for fun, you know, just mm-hmm. as a way to get acclimated.
Yeah. I still think, I haven't ridden them yet, but the Roosevelt Island like tramway, mm-hmm. I still think it's just really, really awesome.
Yeah. Also the existence of Roosevelt Island is very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And just in general, like, I don't know. I'm just kind of surprised someone hasn't just been like, why don't we not?
it can just be a rock down there in the river. Oh, yeah.
Also, a little bit interesting is the Chinatown is like slowly taking over.
Oh, it's spreading into the financial district.
Not so much financial district as like basically like Little Italy is basically like one street.
Oh, okay. Huh.
From what I understand, what's left of Little Italy is basically like the kind of touristy Little Italy, and then the like restaurants that are like, you know, super super good Italian food. They're like institutions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like all of you know, my understanding is it's no longer at all a thing where like just people that just are Italian.
Live there.
What's Chinese for spicy meatball? So speaking of people being in or about to be in different places, Cole, you got some stuff going on too.
Yeah, I bought a house.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like plus five adult, right?
I know, right? Yeah, no. So I'm moving back to back to North Central Ohio to be closer to family. And also
to Cedar Park.
Cedar Point?
Cedar Point, excuse me.
No, Cedar Park. He knows what he said.
Cedar Park.
I don't live around there, so I don't know the name of it.
Yeah.
Kingwood Center, I mean, that's a thing.
I would be about an hour and a half away from Cedar Point. But yeah, there's Kingwood Center. David, get this. They make you pay to go into Kingwood Center now.
Really?
Yeah, so if you want to get in, like, I mean, primarily they did this to take advantage of people who got their prom pictures or homecoming pictures taken there. But yeah, it's, sure. It's $5 a head to get in there and look at the garden.
Huh, that's... Yeah.
I've never been outraged.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it's like, hey, the endowment's having shortfalls or something, then I can do that. But, like, I can't think... I wouldn't think it would be. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be the case. Yeah. But no, I want to be.
Point of order.
Yeah.
There is a Cedar Park, Ohio. It's just outside of Youngstown.
Oh yeah. That's the other side of the state though. Yeah. Cedar Point is an Upper Sandusky. So going to be up there to be closer to family, to reduce cost of living so I can, you know, focus on doing this stuff and writing and building my own business instead of making my landlord rich. Let's say that. So I'm really excited. That's going to be it's going to be coming up here in the middle of September. Is when my move is going to be. So I'll watch for an episode maybe to be either late or missing that week. But yeah, I'm super excited. It's a cute little 3-bedroom house. Going to have a yard, going to be able to get a pet, all that good stuff.
So when you say writing, is that like hex crank, or do you have like a project you're hoping to start up?
David, don't spoil that for people. I'm not actually chastising. Yeah, stuff like that, and also additional projects, doing contract writing for folks, things like that.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it is all really cool stuff. Ben,
how's the streaming situation going to change?
Not at all. I will have fast internet there too.
All right, sweet.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out, there's one bedroom for sleeping.
Uh-huh.
I'm too scared to advance that joke any further.
I'm just saying, you get a cat cam.
I can't do the bit, guys, on my own.
You could do a cat cam now on streaming if you wanted to do that.
I could. Yeah, just have a camera down at foot level, and get an IP camera out in the yard on my bird feeders to have a bird cam too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I'm looking forward to all just the.
But don't cross over those two. That won't end well.
It'd be very funny, and have people vote on which is cuter at the moment, the cat or the birds.
Oh, I meant more like which is going
don't
to win
the
cat
place.
Or the,
yeah. Yeah. Three bedrooms. So I've already scoped it out. The master bedroom is actually going to be my office because it is bigger and it has a little half bath off of it.
And it's the true master of Cole's life.
Yes. Work rules everything around me. Ream. No, and then another bedroom's going to be for me and my sleeping, and there's going to be a guest bedroom, you know, in case somebody wants to come by.
Dibs.
Noted. Yeah.
No problem. There's cool stuff to see. Take you guys down by the prison. That's less weird
Make
than
that
it sounds.
List longer, I dare you.
What's that?
Said, make that list longer. I dare you.
Well, Kingwood Center.
We've got the prison and
Kingwood Center.
Yeah, we got Kingwood Center, Malabar Farm.
Now it costs money, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, $5. Whatever.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. So
I'm surprised Cedar Point isn't on that list.
Yeah, Cedar Point. We're in
Carousel.
We're Cedar Park.
Cedar Park.
Also, I feel like maybe we periodically say this, but. The art museum in Cleveland, on top of being like on all the other things, a really good art museum, is also like the art museum in America for medieval weapons and armor.
Oh wow, I had no idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's
like that it comes up I even though I don't practice it, I keep tabs some on like the people that are kind of reviving the European martial arts stuff, and it comes up fairly often in like discussions and stuff.
Oh, it happens to me all the time. I'll be like, oh, I'm from Ohio, and they're like, oh yeah, the place with the art museum that's got the medieval weaponry.
Yeah. But yeah, it's real close. It's real close to both of those cities. I'm super excited. I'm gonna be at the same gonna be in the same neighborhood as my brother too, like a 5-minute walk away, so like we would be recording those damn Ross kids in person, which is fun. I'd get
so
this.
I need everyone on the podcast to make an estimate how long until his house is TP'd.
Well, by who? I don't think Chris would do it.
There's got to be a startup for this, like being able to hire someone to TP.
TP-ster.
Yeah.
with all the vowels removed.
Oh, yes. So that's my news. I'm super excited about it. Somebody off air said, oh yeah, that's adult plus or whatever. Yeah, it's a thing. I'm very excited to be closer to family is what I am uh what I'm looking forward to. That and having a place of my own without a downstairs neighbor, a new downstairs neighbor who smokes.
Oh no.
Yeah. She moved
in.
Can
you burn the place down on your way out?
No, she's otherwise nice, but she smokes. And you can
all right, PSA, if you're gonna smoke, at least be a dick. All right.
Don't make me conflicted in my hate for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I wouldn't want to fuck over my well, he's got insurance. He'll be fine.
But now it's recorded, so you can't.
Yeah. Well.
Well, no, because they never expect you to, you know, admit it on air.
Right, right. Do it in plain sight, just like okay.
Yeah.
The last apartment I was in. Sorry, got a dog on there.
Which one is that?
I am amazed at your dexterity. You got like half of that bark.
Yeah,
like that's supersonic reflexes.
I'm trying real hard. This is the non-cheater dog, but she's acting great. Sorry.
No, I'm keeping this in. This is very entertaining.
Yeah.
Try me mute. The last apartment I was in Vegas, there was a downstairs smoker as well. I was only there for like 3 months before I moved to Austin, but it was very like sad.
Yeah.
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 Also, Bark Muter sounds like a German like tactics game.
Bark Muter. Oh, man. So I feel like I've talked a lot about myself, uncomfortably so. So, Dennis, what you got going on?
Man, I spent a long time away, so I am now back.
You went on vacation, right?
Went on vacation, went to the Finger Lakes in New York. It is beautiful there. They have lots of wineries there, and my current slurring is due to one of those wines. but
what did you go with?
It was a Pinot Gris from Glenora Winery.
Nice.
The area is known for Riesling, but my favorite wine was actually a rosé, dry rosé from Fox Run. So, but no, it was an amazing time, and I'll talk more about it on the show proper. But the amazing thing was I vacationed with my in-laws, and we spent most of our time at the house playing board games together, and man, that was fun.
Hmm.
So yeah, we'll talk more about that in a bit.
Yeah.
Well, cool. But did hiking, and I already mentioned the wineries, so that was the vacation.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Ben, if you can speak around the dog barking.
Yeah, I'm holding said dog now, so I think she's under control. But
I can hear her whimper. Oh no.
Yeah, she was yawning. Whatever. Anyway.
Okay.
Not much is going on. I played another board game. I will not talk about it on the show, so I'll just briefly mention it now. I don't know if I mentioned it in a previous week or not. It's called Gaia Project, but it's a game I played at Gen Con that I really liked. So I'm getting some of my friends into playing that. So we'll probably play that again in a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a lot of fun.
Nice.
And next week I'm having a goodbye party for one of the dogs. Not this one, but the other one.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I expect to hear how that party went.
It's called a dog gone party, by the way.
That is so good.
It can't not be good.
Yeah, no, that is inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Well, this has been a very long pre-show, a very long kind of opening here. I'm kind of champing at the bit to talk about the news and the multiplayer and talk about what we've been playing. We've got the usual kind of show for you. So why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm going to lead off real quick so we can get it out of the way. In the patented Cole, a thing is happening at a certain time story. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice, the new From Software game, kind of the game that is in the Souls-like repertoire. Done by Hidetaka Miyazaki, that currently has a release date. It is coming out on PS4, PC, and Xbox One simultaneously worldwide on March the 22nd of 2019. There were also some details about a collector's edition that appears to come with a scroll and a couple of coins and some books and strategy guides and a figure and stuff. That will probably be exorbitantly priced. But personally for me, this helps, you know, schedule a certain month of Watch Out for Fireballs when that comes out.
We know when to not bother Cole.
So Cole, did you hear? I hear this game is going to be just like Dark Souls. You should totally bring back Bonfireside Chat.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. That it never occurred to me, nor has it been brought to me. Oh fuck's
so
sake!
You mentioned you have a guest bedroom, or will have a guest bedroom, and so I can come and just witness the whole experience happen live. Is what I'm hearing.
If you want to, yeah. Especially given, you know, we've heard Miyazaki say like, "Oh, I figure this is going to be harder than where Dark Souls 3 got." Not going to prejudge. I want to walk into it with an open mind, but I don't know. Kind of seems like a strange direction for them to take. Yeah, so March 22nd, that is right around the time that, you know, previous games in the series have come out. Who knows if there's going to be a delay like there was, I believe, for Dark Souls 3. Sekiro. Shadows, I have heard they die twice. Any thoughts in addition? Any thoughts aside from taunting me about Bonfireside Chat?
So I feel like that's I don't know. There's some sort of like you only live twice joke in there, but I can't quite pull it off.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. Hopefully there's less yellow face in this.
Oh, was that one?
Oh yeah, that's the one where he went to Japan and disguised himself. Roger Moore dressed up like an Asian person, and it was really uncomfortable. Was that Sean Connery?
Too bad, because like that's like an interesting one within the mythos. I forget if the movie does it, but like in the, if I remember correctly, like that was one of them where he Fleming like wanted to end it, and so like in the, I think in the book he like straight up marries the Bond girl and like.
Oh, yeah, settles down.
Supposed to be like, yeah, it's over.
Hmm. Yeah.
Are you talking about Bond? You only lived twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Connery, I believe.
Yeah, Connery. There we go. Somehow that's more uncomfortable than if Roger Moore did it.
for 007 on the 7th, we did twice baked potatoes for that movie.
Ooh.
And that was in Vegas with me.
What?
That was. Oh my God. That's right.
I made those potatoes.
I definitely don't remember.
Well, were there double anything else in that session? Double scotches?
Double shots. Yeah, yeah. I'm certain.
here's a ridiculous thing. I always forget that Roald Dahl did screenplays for the Bond movies.
I did not know this.
Yeah, no. So I need to like take a look at this because, yeah, here's his bibliography. He at least did. You only live once. Or you only live twice, I guess. Fuck. But yeah,
he did the first treatment for the movie. It was called You Only Live Once.
Yeah, and then they said we got to add some kick to it.
It was a downer. James Bond died.
Ben, that's also the first place I ever played The Last of Us. And I played through the part or through the opening sequence,
which
is a very climactic ending. And then leveraged the PlayStation Plus, like, you know, cloud save feature to be able to pick up from there when I bought it for myself.
Okay.
No,
I remember that very much being a game similar to like what The Witness is now, where whenever someone comes to visit, I just sit them in front of my TV and say, here, play this for like 5 minutes.
So what you're saying is that.
Is The Witness really effective for that?
It's like a math abstracted version of that game, so it's not as accessible, I would say. But
I feel like my like I know like 15 minute exposure to that was basically like, oh, it's some puzzle game. I guess that's I wish it was on my phone, but like, which I mean, I realize there's more to it, but I feel like I wouldn't get that. No. I know. Anyways, that's the idea.
Let's just say that Ben, can't. He has a cabinet of math problems that he wishes he could just set in front of people, but in lieu of doing that, he just gets out The Witness.
It's only a matter of time before he becomes like the math version of Saul.
Wouldn't that be pie? Yeah. I guess he only drilled a hole in his own skull. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's Sekiro. Release date, March 22nd. There's some bigger news, Ben, that you brought. I know you brought two stories, but I don't want to make you pick one. But lots of people got emails today about Amazon changing their stuff. What's happening?
Yeah, so there's kind of two downgrades. I had found of one, and then Jala pointed me to another that's coming up down the pike. So in the middle of August, let me get this right, at the end of August, they're going to get rid of the discounts on pre-ordering games over Amazon.
Yeah.
This is kind of a bummer. It doesn't affect me as much because usually I like to buy games in person day of just so I can get it quicker or be sure that I'll get it quicker. But yeah. It is kind of like a nice feature because it's usually 20% discount on pre-orders. So that's kind of a bummer for people who are into that. And then the other thing that's ending soon is in the middle of September, they're downgrading the Twitch Prime service so that you will then get advertisements. You'll have to like pay $10 a month to stick with the advertisement free service.
Yeah, you have to go with Twitch Turbo.
Yeah.
So what is the point of doing Prime then?
Yeah,
like Twitch Prime.
Twitch Prime gets you free games from them every month, along with like loot crate kind of stuff for like in game content for specific games, and also it gives you a free subscription to throw around at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
More like Amazon base, am I right?
Yes, Amazon is basic.
Or like, Amazon, would it be composite?
Something maybe. Like that, yeah.
Amazon secondary.
Yeah. Amazon subprime, guys. Mm.
Well, I do feel like, I don't know, it seems like Amazon Prime is becoming less and less of a decent deal.
So the price keeps going up, but for a very long time, for a period of 4 or 5 years, they just kept on adding a whole bunch of shit into it. Like there's basically a worse version of Netflix built into your Amazon Prime subscription.
There's that. Yeah. There was Twitch Prime. There's a thousand other things. And get this, what makes it worth it is we found an automated service that will email if your package is more than 2 days to be delivered.
Okay.
Which is like the fundamental promise. And like they figured out how to like programmatically go through all the systems needed to get a big refund or like we're sorry amount of money.
Yeah.
So I think we've had one package be late and we got like $10 back.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So
if I had any idea what that was named, I would say it. I don't.
Yeah, it just seems like I know they've axed a lot of the like Prime videos I was interested in, and it seems like now whenever I go and look for something, one, it's usually not available on Prime for what I want to buy, and two, like their search interface is just horrible.
Oh yeah, it's a nightmare to use, but it's there. That was supposed to be a joke.
I felt like it was more effective just letting it hang.
What are you gonna say, Ben?
I was gonna just pile on this with like general like just being unsatisfied with things, like how Netflix started adding like commercials for their own products within the service now. Mm-hmm. I know there's some internet outrage about that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Disenchantment just came out this week and that was pretty good. So I don't know. Definitely like a mixed bag.
Yeah. A little bit of additional information. So that 20% discount, which I did utilize, that isn't entirely going away. What they're doing is something far more weaselly, which is it's no longer a flat 20% off the price of what you buy. Instead, it is an up to $10 rebate, maybe sometime within 30 days of when you buy the game. So the idea being you get just basically $10 of Amazon credit to apply to whatever you buy next. So they get all the money and then just there's a floating $10 let it ride that happens as long as you keep buying new games from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Is it new games explicitly, or is it anything?
It is specifically a release date, thing. So, like, I just recently ordered the Shenmue 1 and 2 collection for PS4 and Yakuza Kiwami 2. I just ordered those. And, like, yeah, I got 20% off of those. So, like, overall, that saved me, approximately, like, $22.
But when you reinvest that money or whatever, when you spend that money, does it have to be on games, or can it be on anything?
I think it can be on anything.
Okay, gotcha. I was going to say, I would be mad about that. I would call that sleazy, except I would, like, there's no situation in which I will not use that.
Oh, for sure. See, yeah.
I thought that, but then I know, like, I've legitimately, had trouble finding anything I wanted recently on Amazon. Like,
yeah, I get.
Well, congratulations for surpassing materialism.
No, I think it's more just like not wanting to buy Chinese knockoffs.
Yeah, not wanting to do the to mess with the whole counterfeit game.
So Cole, you mentioned Yakuza Kiwami.
I did. Dog. Yeah.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that game. I have some things to say about that game.
Go for it. I was not intentionally setting up a segue, but here we are.
Subconscious segue. Yeah.
Subconscious segue. The best kind. That's how long we've been doing this, folks. but yeah, so that game, if I may move us along.
You may.
That game has in the heart of its downtown area, so Yakuza open world game, you can run around, a version of Tokyo. It has an arcade in it, Club Sega, that actually has a bunch of cabinets from old Sega games.
Yeah, Space Harrier and Hang On and such.
Most notably, it has Virtua Fighter 2.1 and then the Mech Battler Virtual On, which I'd never heard of before now, but apparently people have a lot of affection for.
Yeah.
And so it's just really interesting to see Sega in particular doing this hiding games within games kind of idea. Like, they've done this a lot, particularly in Yakuza, and it's kind of this interesting way to keep old games alive.
can you retake "it's kind of an interesting way to keep games alive"?
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting way to keep old games alive, or give old games new life, in that, you know, here's the opportunity for a whole new set of people to get exposure to them that wouldn't normally.
Yeah.
As opposed to Nintendo actively killing them off.
Yeah. Fuck's sake. Yeah. I am so angry. And I mean, angry is probably no, I'm indignant. Like, yeah, you had a very good thing that was like, I would have been comfortable spending not infinite amounts of money on, but like, I follow the Virtual Console. This is a rant best saved for elsewhere. No, this is they've been doing this for a little while, at least since Yakuza Zero. I know that they've done that, and this is even following off of what they did in Shenmue, including
I was gonna say, it goes back longer than that.
Yeah, including Hang On and Space Harrier and that game in particular. This is really cool. It's a little bit like Animal Crossing when they included all of those NES ROMs and that as well. Like, play this game for long enough, and guess what? You know, here you play the NES version of Donkey Kong, which is fun, you know?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Games within games.
Yeah, it's, the article talks about it as a way to preserve old games. I don't know if I buy that, just because this game itself is going to get old. But it's kind of a cool concept, and it's just a nice little, doesn't cost anyone anything, and it's them being really cool and nice about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is an article on Kotaku kind of talking about, this being a sneaky way for Sega to preserve their older games, or at least make them available for people to, to play. Frank Cifaldi, kind of a noted game preservationist and historian, the person who runs that, who runs and curates that video game museum that goes from retro game show to retro game show. He says, and here there's a quote that I think is very good. What I think we're in the most danger of losing right now is context. I think we're in danger of losing the history around these games as opposed to losing the ability to launch and play them. So when we look at something like, you know, Yakuza, which are almost always either period games or games that are very much fixed in their particular time and place, you know, the fact that you, as you know, as Kiryu, run in, run into this Tokyo arcade and you see how it's laid out and you see all the people around, like, you understand, this game isn't just the code and whatever it spits out onto the screen. This game is where I play it, who I'm near, who I play it with, etc. It's a facsimile, and like all facsimiles, it's imperfect. But I think that it is a stretch in a right direction.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a beat on the posters on the wall in the picture of the arcade in this article, which makes for great podcasting. But I wonder if these are actual like game art posters or if they're just kind of manufactured.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. But just, you know, Sega seems to get this on a level that a lot of other places, Nintendo, don't.
I know. I'd never heard, this is kind of off topic, but I'd never heard of Space Harrier. So I pulled up the Wikipedia for it. And I love their little tag on it. Now we're off to the fantasy zone.
That's a sci-fi game, when. Set.
Yeah, well, is it a sci-fi game? Because the cover art is straight up a dude fighting dragons and cyclops woolly mammoths.
Yeah, you do fight dragons and shit, but it does have space in the title, so.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to jump into it.
Yeah, those are... I don't know. Those are interesting games. I need to boot up the one they put on PlayStation Plus a while back again.
Yeah, I have both 4 and 5 on PlayStation Plus, and I understand that at least 5 is really good. And I played Yakuza 1, which is an amazing game.
What relation does Sleeping Dogs have to Yakuza?
Sleeping Dogs is a really good game. But it is not at all related. Like,
okay,
one thing, it's set in China. Well, in Hong Kong, I believe.
Gotcha. Okay. Never mind then.
Yeah. But it's a really good game. It's notable for like being, I guess, like anti-whitewashed. Like almost all of the voice actors are, actually Chinese, stuff like that.
It's good.
A lot. If I remember correctly, I think like a lot of the incidental dialogue is actually, I guess, Hong Kong, so probably Cantonese, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a good game.
Yeah. Western developed too is kind of one of the other differences, but they're both similar in terms of being semi-open world-ish brawlers, where you explore kind of a section of a city and do missions and stuff around it. Sleeping Dogs could be seen as kind of like a fast follow. Not a fast follow. It came out 7 years after. Yeah. Came out in 2012. Yakuza came out in 2005. It can be seen as being inspired by Yakuza.
Also, the live action trailer for it is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Let's see. We should move quickly through this. David, what do you have?
All right. So, us? I had a couple of quick hits. Someone posted on Hacker News a GitHub repo that is apparently a fan-made Pikmin engine. So now you can make Pikmin games.
Cool. I can see a lot of people being very excited about that.
Yeah. Likewise, this is... Actually, the story, quote unquote, is actually via like people trying to help people troubleshoot their systems in the Steam forums for Monster Hunter World. Oh. And one of the things that comes up is that apparently Monster Hunter World, at least under certain circumstances, uses 25% of its CPU time switching between threads.
Okay.
I guess translation, that would be basically 25% of its time it's switching between different multitasking as opposed to actually accomplishing anything on any of its parallel tasks.
So that sounds high. How does that?
That's incredibly high.
Okay. It seems like it obviates the need for, I don't know, one of the cores on a modern PC processor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. So I don't know. That's just kind of interesting. I'm going to stop there.
Yeah, so there are kind of two things there. Monster Hunter World, incredibly inefficient, has had a very troubled launch. That hasn't stopped people on my Steam list from playing a lot of it, though, so I think that maybe speaks to the quality of the game sticking power, maybe.
Because, I mean, it's Monster Hunter World.
Yeah.
Also, apparently they're making a movie?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Which I hope means then that they will be making like Palico plushies.
Oh, I mean, that there's no reason that can't happen now.
Yes, in fact, I demand it to happen now.
Yeah, well, it also might happen on Etsy, you know, for a surcharge.
Oh, Monster Hunter movie starring I cannot pronounce her last name.
Mila Jovovich from Resident Evil?
Yep.
Weird. Is it directed by Paul W.S. Anderson?
I got nothing.
Oh. I mean, they usually...
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay, there we go. They usually come packaged together.
And the result is always amazing.
Very consistent quality that I dare say scratches at the ceiling of what cinema can offer humanity. Oh, I'm sorry, floor. Scratches at the floor of what cinema can offer.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I asked about, you know, the whole third time's the charm rule, or, you know, second or fourth or fifth or whatever. basically, what sequel has made the biggest leap in quality over its predecessor? As well as what about the biggest dip in quality versus its predecessor?
Hmm. Yeah. I will get us started here with Mike, who says, in this world where everybody and their dog has developed a good open world game, it's hard to fathom how revolutionary Grand Theft Auto 3 was when it was released in 2001. This is true in general, but it is doubly so in comparison with the first two titles in the series, which were funny and clever, but not particularly fun to play. I would go so far as to argue that GTA 3 might be one of the most important video games in the history of the medium. As far as the biggest dip in quality, that's a tricky one. I'm going to say Hitman Absolution. I will concede. I will concede that it's a pretty decent stealth action game, but it was a very poor Hitman game. It was a real disappointment, especially seeing how IO did such a great job with Blood Money. Thankfully, they managed to right the ship with Hitman 2016. Ben, given your dismissive psh, do you have a rebuttal to that?
I didn't say psh, I said ouch. But it wasn't my favorite one. I don't know if I would put it on like top of the list of like biggest dips in quality of games, maybe, because it was still like a fine game to me, at least. Yeah. But I do agree that it was not as good as like Hitman 2 or Hitman Contracts or Hitman Blood Money. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like any of the other Hitman games.
I never played the first one, so maybe, I don't know. But yeah, totally agree with Mike on Grand Theft Auto 3. That was going to be my answer if that was not the first one here. So
Yeah. It is hard to beat a game that kind of single-handedly created a whole genre or a whole kind of bloodline for a genre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, biggest leap is a tough one for me because there were so many good ones. For me, I personally argue either Mass Effect 2 or Half-Life 2. I didn't think it was possible to improve on the original games, but the developers somehow did it for those two sequels. Biggest drop-off for me was ActRaiser 2, which I'm not sure what that game is. They removed the sim part, and the platforming was a lot harder and not as good.
ActRaiser as a series was kind of a tentpole of early SNES games. That's a game where you played as a god, and at least in the first one, you split time between managing your civilization and also doing platformer levels and fighting bosses. ActRaiser 2 is interesting, but I did not have very much fun attempting to play it. I had less fun than I did when I played ActRaiser 1, I suppose.
I feel like any time you describe it as attempting to play, that's probably a bad sign.
So if I say I played it, that kind of makes it sound like I finished it when I didn't. I played
I'd say I play lots of things.
Yeah. Just for clarity, so people don't think that I made an attempt to beat it. It was more to get context when we recorded a WAF about ActRaiser. Mass Effect 2 and Half-Life 2 are very good answers, I think. Mass Effect 2 in particular. I think Half-Life 2, a lot of the bones for that were there, whereas Mass Effect 2 kind of shows a positive shift in priorities away from kind of like crunchy CRPG stuff and more toward, a choice-based episodic narrative.
They took away the Mako parts, which was a good decision.
Yes.
And added characters you care about.
Yeah. Let's see. David, what does David say?
David
says... That felt intentional.
David says, improvement? SteamWorld Dig to SteamWorld Dig 2. Kept all the amazing audiovisual work and really expanded on the gameplay in a great way. Misstep? Xenosaga Part 1 to 2. Really took the combat and character building down a notch from the first game. Did improve again in Part 3, though.
Yeah, I never played beyond Xenosaga Part 1, but SteamWorld Dig 2 keeps the core satisfying loop of SteamWorld Dig 1 and adds a grappling hook, which is the cheapest way possible to get me on your side, I guess. that reminds me, I've not finished SteamWorld Dig 2. It's still sitting on my Switch. Like, I got up to the very end, and I let it die. So that might be something I pick up.
Is it bad that I can't remember if I played SteamWorld Dig or SteamWorld Dig 2?
I mean, you don't... it's most likely that you played the first one. I don't remember you talking about the second one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is SteamWorld Dig more Dig Dug or more Terraria?
That's more Terraria, I guess, because it is about a resource cycle as opposed to kind of like single screen kind of stuff. Also, it's more about kind of constant downward exploration. Yeah, with small little like detours into puzzle chambers and puzzle rooms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Monstro say?
Best improvement: Pokemon Gold, Silver, Day and Night Cycle. Pokemon had genders, full colors, two regions. Best Pokemon game ever. Worst: Dip, the Kojima Productions Game Boy Advance game, Boktai 2, ditched its stealth, which was amazing in the first game, and Jack 2. Oh, you stuck me with this one. took amazing 3D platforming with great levels designed around exploration and made it a GTA wannabe in every way. The edgy voice acting and shoehorned story, guns, for some reason, terrible driving in an empty open world which had nothing to do in it other than crash into other flying cars. I bought the trilogy for PS3, fucking adored the first one, but gave up on the second one after they asked me to skate to advance the story. I heard the third one was this in the same vein, so I never even tried it. And I couldn't help myself. I posted that Jack 3 is worth fighting through for. I will also say, as someone who, like, my first exposure to open world games was not GTA. It was Jack 2. That was enough to get me through to the third game, which is legitimately amazing.
Yeah.
But that is neither here nor there.
Monstro, you don't know what you've done.
Yes. I have blood spreading out my ears as I was forced to read that. My eye is twitching.
That was the fourth response. It was going to circle back around to Dennis. If there was a way for me to keep you from needing to read that, I would have done it. But I guess I failed in my duty.
Yeah. I have to say, Bo-Katai, I haven't played two, but at least the first one is one of the highest games on my list of like games I can never go back to, but really wish I could, if that makes sense.
Just because you don't have the hardware to do it and it doesn't emulate.
Yeah. And just in general, like strictly speaking, I have the game somewhere and I think I have, you know, whichever of the Game Boy Advances or whatever it required, but like, The time where I have enough time and stuff like that in my life to play a game that you can only play, you know, during the height of the noonday sun has passed.
Seems like a game made for recess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pokemon Gold and Silver, though, that is a pro reco.
Oh,
yeah. That is a big jump. Big jump. Juan says, Fallout 3 to New Vegas. It offered so many quality of life adjustments that reinvigorated my interest in the series, jury rigging, for example. And the worst dip, from Bioshock 2 to Infinite, forced to only carry two weapons instead of the traditional weapon wheel that I felt was integral to the series that I knew and loved.
I think blood's coming out of my ear on that one.
Bioshock 2 is so good, though.
Yeah, Bioshock 2 was fine. I thought Infinite was the best of the series, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think it's more for the narrative than the gameplay mechanics.
All right, I can see that. Yeah. New Vegas is another very good answer on that, actually.
Speaking of...
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Steven says...
Yeah, Ben, what'd Steven say?
Fallout 3 to New Vegas was the best jump in quality. Worst tip was Fallout New Vegas to Fallout 4. It really fell flat with the story and the dialogue.
And now David is bleeding from his ears. Shit, dog.
I'm excited.
I feel like bleeding from ears implies disagree, whereas this is more like a man after my own heart.
Okay. Sorry, I want as many of us as possible to be bleeding from the ears at the end of this.
Well, okay, you know.
I'm excited. I was wondering if anyone would pick the same series for both answers, and this is the first one. So.
Yeah. I think that speaks to how high the highs of New Vegas are, more than the lows of 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. David,
Just randomly, was Fallout 3 the first one that wasn't like a tactics game or a... like
top-down turn-based
game or something?
Yeah, it was a big departure from the previous ones. Fallout 3 was also the one that it was the first one that Bethesda developed.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Now I forget. David, what does Jack say?
Jack says, I'll go back a little further in my gaming history and say that the Sierra Adventure games had a great jump in quality after incorporating the mouse and VGA graphics. Space Quest 4 and King's Quest 5, not the console version, were both such revelations to me, both because of expanding the color palette and incorporating this new clicky thing. I don't know about the greatest individual dip in quality, but oh boy, greatest collective dip has to go to the later half of the Mega Man X series.
Yeah, so,
now blood
is rushing into my ears. Yeah. my ears are gaining more blood.
Must complete the set.
So the biggest dip in quality would either have to be between X2 and X3 or X4 and X5. I would throw my back entirely behind X4 to X5. X5 is just it's a plummet. It really, truly is. Yeah. And also having done, spent a little bit of time both with the original version of Quest for Glory, and then its fan-made VGA remake. This also makes sense to me as well, because adding the mouse and adding kind of menu-based dialogue as opposed to fucking around with a parser makes it far more approachable. Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, improvement might be the Dishonored series, by which I assume he means the Dishonored sequel, because there's only one extra game in that series. Cool. Yeah. Which, you know, that's a high starting point, according to Cole, and not saying much, according to everyone else on the podcast.
Hey, Jala likes those games. Come on. Don't forget Jala.
She's not here. She doesn't count.
Oh, no. Oh, she, that's don't not say true. That. That's...
No, it's known fact. If you're not here, you cease to exist.
Okay.
I forgot we were Ostrich in the Sand podcast.
Yeah. And then Dip would be fear gradually getting worse over three games. For the one that's an improvement and a dip, all at the same time, Morrowind. They added so much while cutting out heaps. Interesting.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think Fear technically got worse over five games.
Oh, no.
Well, really? they also had expansions and stuff, right?
Yeah, okay. A different company made a series of expansions that were like semi... that were... You know, not the modern DLC expansions, like actually finish the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fear 2 and 3 basically ignored all that and ruined the story in their own special way.
Yeah. They also added co-op, though. So that's a little bit of a... That complicates it somewhat.
Also a free-to-play shooter. So actually six games.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hmm. Let's see. So David writes, Resident Evil 4, hands down. 2 was brilliant, but 4 revolutionized the genre, and it was a huge step up from the slight misstep that was Nemesis. Oh, here's the blood. Oh, okay.
Well, I feel we can only assume that he's implying that the greatest step down was 7.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Now we've got Quadra ear bleed
shots
going.
Shots firing all over the place. This multiplayer.
Are you seriously taking shots at 7, David?
I actually seriously would. I think they took a strange but fairly unique game and basically made like let's do another Outlast.
Huh. Okay.
I didn't realize I had to kill you.
No. I think that to me that speaks more to like you really like the over the shoulder action based ones as opposed to the exploration tensiony ones.
Also, I would say like as much as they were like as much as they were legitimately kind of a train wreck, they were a unique train wreck.
Mm, yeah.
Whereas I feel like 7 was just kind of a, you know, someone, you know, kind of licked their finger, held it up, and realized that the wind was blowing towards Outlast and Amnesia.
Mm, okay.
I do think that's the best way to describe Resident Evil 5 is like a unique train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah.
5 and 6, yeah. Really.
I will, you know, Resident Evil 4 is unassailable. It is a very good game. It is an incredibly important game. I see that as simultaneously a lateral step and also a step up. I don't know that I could praise Resident Evil 4 at the expense of RE3, though. Mm. RE3 is tremendously satisfying in a mechanical way. It is, you know, something of an apotheosis of that particular model of survival horror. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are on Steam now, right? Like the older Silent Hill Resident Evil games?
No, they're on PSN as classics, but only on the PlayStation 3. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, I got so blinded with rage, I forget who wrote that one. Was that you, Dennis, or was that
was me? Don't you dare pin that on me.
No, that was me. Ben, what does Adam say?
Adam says, Donkey Kong Country 2 was a great sequel, such great improvements to things like bonus levels and collectibles, but still great gameplay from the first intact. Devil May Cry 2 was definitely a low point. The story was poor, and they took away Dante's charm. Gameplay was repetitive, with more than a few bosses that I had to slowly kill with endless pistol shots. Let's get an ear check. Anyone bleed in on that one?
Oh, no. Like,
all right.
I would be shocked if you could find, like, even a super hardcore, like, Devil May Cry fan that didn't say that Devil May Cry 2 was basically crap.
All right.
Now, oddly enough, that's the only game in the series that I've never even remotely touched.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've played, like, the first level of the first game, and then I played 3, 4, and everything else. But I've never touched 2.
Yeah, I think the only, like, contribution it made is, I think the way pistols handle while you're in the air, while in the subsequent games, were actually, like, more or less based on the animation and stuff like that for that from 2, but that's basically all it added.
Yeah.
Oh, so pistols making you hover was not in 1?
Well, particularly the whole, like, weird, like, flip upside down with the pistols thing.
Gotcha. Okay.
Let's see, David, what does Justin say?
Justin says, most improved, Ass Creed 2. Biggest dip, Master of Orion 3.
Yeah, Justin sniped one of my possible answers for this. Assassin's Creed 2 is a revelation. Weirdly, Assassin's Creed Revelations is not. yeah, Assassin's Creed 2 is a fantastic game. I don't know, and maybe I'll make this my official answer because I'm struggling for something positive to say. I would even say... What's that?
Said you can't. That's what I had in mind. Just take. Okay, I'll do Jack 3.
Okay.
just Black Flag, Dennis.
No, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. I would say that is a similarly big jump for me, although, I don't know, the jump from 1 to 2... is hard to argue with. So who knows?
Which
if that's
one
my answer.
First added multiplayer?
Brotherhood.
Brotherhood. Okay, then that one was definitely my answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here, Dennis. What does Bill say?
He says BioShock to BioShock 2. Interesting. The gameplay feels better because you don't have to choose between wielding a plasmid or a weapon. Combat encounters were improved, and I enjoyed setting up rooms full of mines, turrets, tripwires, hacked cameras, and cyclone traps laced with bees and or fire for splicers in a tower defense sort of way to either fight splicers or protect little sisters while they're harvesting. Whew, that is a very full room. Like, you need to start with a big room.
Mm-hmm. You do.
Like, sorry, we can't harvest in this room. We need at least twice as big.
Yeah.
Just so we can set up all my shit. He continues, the change to hacking made things feel more tense before and during combat. I think I like this feature more than the previous pipe/tile game that could freeze time. BS2, BioShock 2, had all of the same great writing and environmental storytelling and atmosphere as its predecessor while drastically improving the gameplay. Huh. I guess in my mind, and this could be completely wrong, BioShock 2 is like the black sheep, like kind of forgotten kid of the whole BioShock series.
No, you're right.
Am I wrong with that? Okay.
You're correct. BioShock 2 got written off because it felt like an expansion pack more than a proper sequel.
Isn't it also like semi non-canonical or at least like not that important to the story or something?
Yeah, it's like
I've not played it, so like this isn't me like trying to like snipe at, like I that was just kind of understanding I got.
It's like Wikipedia talking.
It's like a new Star Wars movie where it's telling a story that's like, okay, I guess that's kind of interesting, but you really didn't need to tell me that. But it's just a backstory on the little sisters.
Yeah.
Sick burn.
Yeah, it gives you more time in Rapture, but that's a thing.
It feels kind of like an Obsidian game where they made some like good improvements on like the mechanics of the game. Mm-hmm. And that's the only respect I made in. The story was not as good as an Obsidian game, but
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, what?
I was going to say it would not rise to, Obsidian levels. I like the story in BioShock 2 quite a bit, primarily because it kind of looks at a similar idea of, a persuasive but hypocritical autocrat, from a different direction. Yeah. let's see here. The next one is aimed kind of specifically at me. I'll just read this because it's my turn anyway. Franz says, biggest improvement, Nier to Nier Automata. Still interesting characters and themes, but the story is better and everything you do in the game is actually fun. I've got Nier on my mind lately. Blame Cole. The biggest dip may be Morrowind to Oblivion. From deep, interesting, and different to bland, boring, and predictable. Skyrim was a slight step up, but I am not holding my breath for The Elder Scrolls 6.
Is Elder Scrolls 6 like officially in development?
Yeah, they announced it, and they did like a small little kind of just fluffy teaser reveal. But
I'm kind of surprised. That seems like the type of game they don't make anymore.
New games?
Yeah, well, I mean, no.
Massively single player.
I mean, yeah. if you're looking at the ROI and the legs that an individual game would get, they're going to try as hard as they can to make to milk 6 like they did 5. So, Ben, what does Noah say?
Noah says, best improvement, Devil May Cry 2 to Devil May Cry 3. So we have another entry in this.
Mm-hmm.
The series could easily have ended after 2 due to how bland, repetitive, and soulless it felt. But Devil May Cry 3 kicked everything back into high gear with colorful characters, focus on over-the-top stylish gameplay and cutscenes, and a much improved combat system. Worst dip is Resident Evil 6 is hot garbage, but thanks to a passable combat system, it can actually be a lot of fun to play through with somebody and laugh your butts off at the absurdly clunky dialogue and story beats.
Yep. I'd be curious because a lot of these instances have been dips from one sequel to the kind of chronologically next one. Mm-hmm. Is 6, I'd be curious, does Noah consider 6 to be that much worse than 5? Because I think that 6 is a lot better than 5.
Yeah, it's probably 6 in comparison to 4.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I feel like 6 is, like, me being more serious, less trolling Cole, I feel like 6 is kind of a weird one in that it kind of was the crystallized moment where they sort of embraced everything that was kind of clunky about where they were going with Resident Evil.
Mm, yeah.
Whereas 5, like, I don't know that, like, it was gameplay-wise or even, like, really story-wise better or worse than the others so much as it was just kind of generic.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
All this is just making me want to go play Resident Evil 4 again.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I've been thinking about doing that too. So let's round everything out with David. What does Sam say?
Sam says, the leap from Pokemon Red/Blue/Green/Yellow to Gold/Silver/Crystal was incredible. It began the long procession of generational stat rebalancing for starters. Getting the first generation Pokemon games playable on Game Boy was already a godly feat, but they managed to add 100 more Pokemon, Game Boy Color support, and Satoru Iwata himself was able to cram the entire map from the first game into it as a second quest. Not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Pokemon could now breed, which made it a lot easier to try out different strategies, as well as massively improving the multiplayer aspect. Every Pokemon generation makes improvements, but after playing Pokemon Red over and over in high school, this was the one that left the biggest impression on me.
Yeah, it is really hard to fuck with Silver and Gold as kind of like the king of this for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you, Sam. Thank you, everybody. We should do ours. So I have kind of two half answers here. I normally try to be a little bit more discreet than that, but it is hard to pick. I'm going to be basic and look at Nintendo stuff because that is kind of that has not been addressed a lot in this. If I'm looking at the biggest jump in quality, it would be Ocarina of Time to Majora's Mask.
Ooh.
Yeah, from a barely held together Link to the Past retread to kind of this very weird and inspired and tight, very expressive thing, I think is just makes it infinitely more memorable in my mind. I think that the mask system adds an awful lot to player expression as well. Yeah, Majora's Mask is far and away, I think, and I don't know. Again, like I said, it's hard to fuck with Pokemon Gold and Silver, but Majora's Mask would be my answer. As far as kind of a leap in importance, it would be Super Mario 3 to Super Mario World, from a very well executed, you know, kind of challenging 2D platformer that was very linear, to a 2D platformer that was more deliberate and more exploration based and felt more wide open and full of mystery. I think that you see a lot of where Nintendo would decide to go with the leap to Super Mario World. Yeah. You know, which isn't to say I'm not taking a shit on Super Mario 3 like I'm taking a shit on Ocarina of Time. I think Super Mario 3 is an exquisite game. and I think that's everybody. I think that might be Ben with his ears bleeding.
Yeah. Well, wait, for Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
I really like Ocarina of Time. I know.
Yeah.
Did they have masks before Ocarina of Time? I'm not like a Zelda historian. Did not Ocarina of Time introduce masks to the Zelda franchise?
I don't think so.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, I was going to try and make you feel guilty for saying that.
All right. For besmirching the honor.
Can I say my answer?
Yes.
All right. For jumping quality, I'm going to say Spider-Man 2 from Spider-Man 1, because they made an actual Spider-Man game that you would want to play instead of like a weird one. Uh-huh. And then another speculative good one is The Witcher 3 is probably the highest dipping quality, but I've never played The Witcher 2, so I'm just speculating on that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow, the highest jump or the
highest jump or the biggest dip?
The highest jump.
Oh, okay. The way you phrased it, it sounded like Witcher 3 was a piece of garbage.
Yeah, sorry. I had two for each of these: a speculative jump and a speculative dip.
Yeah,
and an actual jump and an actual dip. And the bad ones, the actual bad one for me is Cod Blops from Modern Warfare 2. Was a real big letdown, even though it was a
terrible. Okay, now my ears are bleeding.
Oh no. And my speculative dip is Metal Gear Survive after Metal Gear 5. But I have not played that game, and probably will not ever. So
yeah, Metal Gear Survive didn't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't do my dip. As much as I love Silent Hill 4, Silent Hill 4 after 3 would be mine.
Ooh.
Yeah,
Man, I can't believe you kept my dip intact.
What do you mean? Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
Sure. So I think my one for the biggest jump would probably be Stanley Parable 2. Which because it's really improved on the original by not existing.
Okay. For fuck's sake, man.
Sorry. I again disclaimer that that's entirely in jest. actually can't probably Smash Bros. Melee would maybe be mine.
Okay.
I have a couple quick hits for greatest drop. Metal Gear Solid 5 Act 1 to Act 2.
Okay.
Far Cry 5.
Okay.
City of Heroes to Champions Online.
Hmm.
But I think the one I'm gonna go with for maybe being one that's would fly under the radio would be Wario Land 3-4.
Oh shit. Yeah, no, when they added traditional death.
Added traditional death and also took a game that was just crazy, crazy long and made it like a pretty quick like hub and spoke or kind of hub and spoke like level system.
Yeah, yeah. Just kind of cut away at it, diminished it.
Yeah. I will say two other. It's just for games that I still like, but I lost things that I felt diminished in would be Deus Ex losing the conspiracy theory elements.
Right.
And DMC losing the design of Ebony and Ivory and the controls.
Okay. The controls specifically from 3 to 4.
Yeah. Well, I would say from the previous Devil May Cry games to DMC. So all of them use the same design for Ebony and Ivory being 1911s, and then all of them had pretty much the same controls.
Okay. Yeah. So when they switched developers, yep. Momentarily. Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So for dipping in quality, I would take any of the attempts to jump Sonic into the new generation.
Oh, that's hard.
Sonic Unleashed or Sonic, Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I would have needed to play those seriously. And it's hard to, it's really hard to say, like, you know, was Sonic 3D Blast the dip there? Like there are a lot of culprits for what drove that particular nail into that particular coffin.
I don't think I've ever seriously played a Sonic game. So like this sounds eloquent. My understanding was that the fandom, a lot would argue, like, Sonic 2D to the Dreamcast games was even, like, a huge dip.
Yes, yeah.
Or is that just being kind of sour grapes, or is that...
No, that's a pretty safe dividing line, but I think that what people who are particularly nostalgic for those games will ignore is that things got flaky before that.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I had to bring it up at least to hear your commentary on it, since you didn't choose it yourself.
Yeah.
And then biggest jump, as we said before, would be the introduction of Assassin's Creed multiplayer. Really also just Assassin's Creed 2 for actually having a game.
Yeah.
Very interesting system of mechanics.
Yeah. Cool. Is that everything, Dennis?
That is everything.
Cool. So thank you, everybody, for participating in this. If you would like to throw in your answers on these multiplayers, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Sorry, I was doing it Tuesday last week. Really fucked me up. we would like to see you do that. Those questions go up thanks to Dennis and thanks to Jala, who worked together to make sure that happens.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you have been away the longest, so I will throw to you first.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start with an old game with some new updates that I've continued to play. I think I talked about No Man's Sky before, in particular the next update. But my goodness, I've just kept on sinking hours into it and have just felt incredibly rewarded for every second I've spent in the game, which you could not say about the individual game, even remotely. Like, just the everything about the next update from, I think I talked about the multiplayer last time, but since then I've gotten into, you know, frigate ownership and owning like a fleet of starships, to actually like building a base on a very pretty planet that I found. Oh. Like, everything about this game just is everything that people hoped it would have been when it launched. So I've really enjoyed spending more time on that.
So I have a question immediately. Mm-hmm. How differentiated are the planets now? Because I know that was one of the hangups about the original game, is like there's like 7 or 8 templates of planets, but you get to know them like pretty quickly.
Yeah. I don't think it's quite that bad. I've definitely, I think it's irradiated planets, felt like, these are kind of similar. Mm-hmm. But in general, they've done a good job keeping the variety pretty high. And I have not yet gotten to like the super weird, like, I think they call them redacted planets, where there's just like really off, geology or fauna or what have you running around.
It means that's a feature.
No, it is a piece of the game where the planets would be most different that I just haven't gotten to yet.
Okay, what I meant was like this is where they're just kind of making everything weird. It's not where it's like, oh yeah, the system totally got effed and created these weird plants.
Right. No, no. Yeah, it is intentional weirdness.
Okay.
Which is funny. There's one particular kind of planet with these, like, all the plants look kind of like cyber jellyfish. And everyone shares screenshots of it. So I think it's a template that they made for an exotic planet that is a little bit too samey. But really, the fun of the game has not been in... it has been in discovering new planets and everything, but the progression now through the technology tree is incredibly fun and rewarding. And they pepper your motivation to get new things and develop your base and everything else now with actual characters.
Fun.
And I think these NPCs are consistent, you know, for every player. But it's just, you know, quirky personalities that you really connect to, and I'm intrigued by the story. And I think the original No Man's Sky that I played was just so big and so open that any story just felt superfluous. Like, it felt like you could not do anything interesting with this universe, anything directed with this universe. Whereas now with the next update and coming back to the game after a long, long time, it feels like there's, you know... A little bit of intention feels at home in this universe.
Yeah.
And is welcome. And, you know, I'm excited about finding out what's going on with my robot scientist, or excited about finding out, you know, or recruiting the next vessel for my Starfleet.
Yeah.
It's hard to put my finger on exactly where that line is, but it feels like the universe has crossed a line from, super gigantic and big, but meaningless to, you know, still super gigantic and big, but having a little bit of meaning. And I think you know, they forfeit a little bit maybe of that complete randomness that the original game had, that yes, you were truly stepping into this gigantic empty universe that did not care about you. Which had its own kind of awe. To now they've put just enough caring, just enough, you know, quote-unquote unique characters, they are designed and they are purposeful, which is almost like the opposite of unique because everyone gets them, to make it feel meaningful.
Yeah.
And that meaningful experience is one that I've found very, very rewarding.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the sense that I got from the admittedly limited time that I spent with the original No Man's Sky was that most of what you saw in terms of characters or things that you, people that you interacted with, were just kind of, for lack of a better word, species stereotypes, you know, like this is this particular kind of alien that has this particular language that serves this particular role when you just kind of like stumble across them. And they just kind of functioned as, you know, ciphers for the mechanics, you know, like they this is the box that you put all of your resources into to make this particular thing happen.
Yeah. Now there's at least the directed characters that I've experienced, like there's a little bit more to it than that.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that sells short all the other kind of progression improvements that they made. Because like I said, progressing through the tech tree and just discovering new stuff of what's out there separate from the characters has also been made more fun, more enjoyable. And I am excited to touch down on a new planet, etc. So
nice.
I've gotten to the point where I'm making enough money that I can legitimately buy the cool shit that I see. So that's probably a frustration in the I think I'm in the mid game now. So it's a frustration between the early and mid game is you start seeing all this really cool shit in terms of starships or guns or, you know, star fleets. And you're like, oh my God, that looks amazing. I want that. But it is just, you know, orders of magnitude outside of your ability to buy. I finally started crossing into the range that when I see something really cool that I want, I can get that. And that's the best feeling in the game, is like I happened upon this algorithmically designed starship that looks completely badass.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can pick that up. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
Get it. So that's cool. Pro tip for anyone playing, if you don't know already, the way to get rich quick and legitimately versus using an exploit is to buy scanner upgrades, of all things.
Okay.
So when you're on a planet, you can scan for, you know, the different animals and plants that you see, and it will give you a very limited amount of resources, so like call it 400 credits. But if you upgrade it with all the different scanners, you can instead pull down like 140,000 credits per scan.
Yeah.
And that just makes it trivial. Like visiting a new planet basically equips you and scanning a couple things there equips you to buy anything that you want.
Yeah.
So from there, then you start building your Starfleet, which goes and does missions for you, which brings in more money. And so now you're basically hopping around the galaxy, being able to actually pick up anything that looks cool. And that is where the game starts feeling really, really fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've sunk a ton of time into No Man's Sky and enjoyed every second of it. And I said we've got a co-op and multiplayer Slack channel that is effectively the No Man's Sky channel right there.
Right.
But what I said was, you know, I just feel happy every time I've played that I saw the cool, weird stuff that I've seen.
Yeah.
So that's good stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like they kind of made the game do a 180 for you.
It's finally what everyone wished that it was. And it sounds like they're going to continue making it even better. So I'm pretty excited. And then the other game I've been playing is Zero Escape, Zero Time Dilemma.
Oh shit. Yeah. No, that came out on PSN.
That's correct. So this is the third entry in the series, and I think the conclusion to it, correct me if I'm wrong.
I think so. I know the director's working on a different non-related thing.
Yeah,
that's hard to say for sure.
I think when I saw it came out, I kind of was like, all right, I'll do a Wikipedia dive to catch myself up on the plot, because I played most of Virtue's Last Reward and none of Nine Hours, Nine Persons, Nine Doors.
Okay.
So I did the Wikipedia catch up, read all the plot from the previous two games. It still made no goddamn sense, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then jumped into this one. And you know,
it sounds like you understand it perfectly.
Exactly. Yeah. In a way, it's the perfect vacation game. So this is a game where it's a combination of kind of visual novel and then escape the room puzzles. And, you know, the plot kind of centers around a lot of weird theoretical science, Schrodinger's cat kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got a team of people or, you know, a group of people, nine people that are forced into this bunker and forced to make choices on who lives and who dies while being completely separated from each other, or at least having three groups of people completely separated from each other. And so you're in this weird state, again, Schrodinger's cat, where you've made the choice whether to kill or not kill someone, but you don't know how it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of weird stuff happening from there.
Right.
So that plot advances. It's got a lot of characters from the previous games, which again, I was only passingly familiar with. But having spent some time with the second game, I would say that these characters or these versions of the characters are much more palatable than previous games. I feel like I would have winced to share Virtue's Last Reward with people just because some of the characters in that game are so over the top and tropey. And it's just, you know, all the worst parts of anime on display.
Looking at you, Alice. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. whereas this one, the characters feel a little less over the top.
Yeah.
And not to their detriment, you know, it's still interesting people that have their quirks.
It also, I mean, that like that this works to its favor that the visual design is changed significantly. A shift. So Virtue's Last Reward had 3D generated characters, but they were mostly made to pose. And do the kind of the talking head dialogue. This has kind of more realistically proportioned characters that are developed and designed for like full-on cinematic acting.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so it's got a little bit of, I won't call it Uncanny Valley, but it's also, you're definitely watching, you know, rigged models perform a little bit, yeah, yeah, which is, you know, just okay. But I think in terms of, again, the wince worthiness, it's a step away. Like I felt comfortable playing this game around my in-laws. So
yes,
there's that. The story is intriguing. I've really primarily followed two of the three groups and haven't really touched the third at all.
Which two?
So the two groups that I've followed is C team and Q team. Not that, that means anything. So it's a team of two characters from the previous game and then a firefighter that has a knack for like knowing the right decision to make.
Yeah.
And then Q team is a seeming, you know, people have their memory erased, but a duo that seems to have some kind of romantic past. And then just randomly a kid that doesn't remember who he is.
Yeah.
And has a mask.
Yeah. Notably is wearing like a gigantic spherical helmet.
Right. And cannot take it off. And then the third team is like two characters from the previous games and a like super bland, as far as I can tell, girl character. Mm-hmm. So I just haven't messed with that.
She's the one that's almost her like character trait though. Right.
Right. I'm sure it's a trope of some sort.
It's three people who specifically have relation to Virtue Slash Reward. So the first team, the one that, yeah. So, I mean, it has Sigma and Phi in it, but also Diana has a tie to that as well. Whereas
was she in Virtue Slash Reward, does she just have a tie to it?
A tie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas the first team, aside from Carlos, who's kind of just out of nowhere, you have Junpei and Akane from the first game.
Yeah, who are incredibly important characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're also very different. Their characterization is very different than it was before.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see him I play with that when I've only read the Wikipedia article on the previous games.
Right.
So it's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. But I've enjoyed it. Like it was the perfect vacation game.
It's like summer reading. It's like taking a graphic novel on the road.
You've got it. So I'm about 10 hours in and to the point where I'm kind of filling in the different timelines. Mm-hmm. That's the other big gimmick of the game, is that the base timeline kind of ends pretty quickly. And then you start getting into all the variants of how things could have gone down.
Yeah.
Slash did go down.
and who knows? What do you think of that structure where it is explicitly as fragmented as possible?
Oh, I love it. It's amazing. When it's got this memento thing going on, only not as structured, where when you choose a scene to watch, you don't know where it is on the timeline. And it's only after you've watched it that you can go back and see where in the timeline and in what timeline it occurs.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Man, you talking about this makes me want to go back to it, but I do not have time to do it.
Yeah. Did you finish the game or
what? Oh yeah. Yeah. I it's been a while since I have touched these games again. Mm-hmm. And I think that I've got enough 999 in me, but, I don't know. I only played Zero Time Dilemma once and I thought that was very good. So
sure.
Yeah.
It is, you know, it's on my Vita, it's on my nightstand, and so it's just easy to pick up and play whenever I got some spare time.
Yeah. Individual scenes are like 15 minutes long too. Like it's it is kind of meant to be like micro episodic.
I'm on an escape the room puzzle, the casino themed room that is kicking my ass though.
Yeah, that one's kind of tough.
The final puzzle of that is just, oh my god. But yeah, it's good times.
Nice. Anything else?
No, those are my two.
Cool. Ben, you were not here last week, so I will throw it to you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got a weird one this week. So speaking of wanting to play games that people are talking about, one of the games that I played this week, is I went back and played Dead Cells for a little bit, because people were talking about it on the Level channel.
It recently was re-released on the Switch.
Yeah, and I can't remember how long ago they released like the 1.0 version of the game.
Not that long ago. I mean, a little bit, but like what, a month or two?
Yeah,
yeah. When a lot of people were talking about it last, it was in early access.
Yeah, and that's when I played it. I think like about a year ago or so, maybe. But yeah, no, it's still fun. Still has the same sort of thing where it's still a roguelike, still a fun sense of progression. Forgot that you need to play it with a controller pretty much because the key for rolling around is left shift, and it's really hard to do with your pinky the amount of times that you need to do it. Also, it turns on the sticky keys when you're doing
holding it down.
Oh no!
Yeah,
so that's a problem. But yeah, once I figure that out and get on the controller, it's a lot of fun. They added a few different things. So one of the mechanics in the game is like there's certain parts of a map that you won't be able to get to until you've gotten a certain distance in the game or gotten to a certain level in the game. You'll like be able to unlock abilities that kind of retroactive. It's like a Metroid. That's what the word I was looking for. So it's like a Metroid Vania roguelike, yeah. Which is how everyone describes the game. Yeah, so anyway, I only spent a little bit of time with that, but it's still good. I don't know if I'll stick with it or not, but it's still a pretty fun game, and it's still pretty, it's a similar feeling as playing, like, maybe, like, Picross or Sudoku, where you can kind of turn your mind off and just get in this, like, zen state of, like, rolling around and killing people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have, I forget, maybe I suspect the answer, do you have experience with the Castlevania games at all?
Not really. I've seen some of the older ones, like the one where the castle turns upside down, but it's mostly watching people play it, not playing it myself. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was there a follow-up with that or?
No. I just, the games are kind of related in terms of the play, like it has been described as a roguelike Castlevania. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to see if you had that context and could talk about it that way.
So this was also actually the main thing I played because I have had my PS4 most of the week. And at least kind of my feel on it is has a lot of similarity. However, it's much much faster paced and much slicker.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. whereas. Particularly, I guess I'm saying the Castlevania series, as opposed to, I don't have a lot of experience with Metroid, but the Castlevania series tends to be a lot of, platforming and, kind of being very tactical and, kind of how you engage with enemies, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, Dead Cells by... introducing particularly the dodge roll that has very generous iframes, it really allows much more of a action feel to it.
Yeah, you're basically invulnerable when you roll. The agreement is like if wherever you end up on your roll, though, if you're in the danger zone, you're going to get hit. But right. Yeah.
And then there's a number of other like weird kind of mini features that for example it actually takes the regain system from Bloodborne, and it never actually tells you that that's a thing, and it isn't nearly as significant to it, but mm-hmm. It is there. Similarly,
what's the regain system?
So where if you get hit by an enemy, if you immediately attack them, you can regain some of that health you lost.
Yeah. So it's a way to encourage aggression through counterattacks. Mm-hmm. So that you don't turtle up.
Oh. Is that like baked into every game, or is that like weapon specific or is like a random ability you can get?
I think that's baked into every game.
Okay.
In every game you play of Dead Cells?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Similarly, there's things like if you kill, I think it's like 5 enemies in rapid succession, you get a buff to your movement speed.
Hmm.
Things like that. There's just like a lot of little features in it that give it a little bit more of an action-y feel.
Yeah. Here's my question. Are you making your build decisions about what kind of character or what kind of aptitudes you want to have within each individual run? Or are you kind of, is your progress contributing to an overall build that you take into all of your runs?
It's within each individual run because like the weapons you pick up are randomized. And so you have like basically like three things that you can improve. There's like red, purple, and green, or like red's like aggressive, purple's like your secondary things like turrets, and green's like health or defense like shields, which I've never used. Finish what you're gonna say about shields.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I feel like that's kind of the other side to it is, like Ben said, it is within run, but it seems to me that there's very much a hierarchy of like purple is probably the most effective or at least the safest. Mm-hmm. You know, red is, generally, the most all around, the most, kind of solid, and then green is just worthless.
Yeah, the idea is like purple, you can kill enemies without actually being there, which is pretty safe. So just throw a couple turrets, whip them from afar or something, and then it's no problem. Yeah. But red can be really strong, but you have to be next to the person to kill them with it. So that's why it's a little bit riskier.
Yeah.
Although I do love you can, after each level, you can unlock what they call a mutation, which is more or less like a perk, and mm-hmm. there's one for brutality for red that after you kill an enemy for, I don't know, like 5-10 seconds, you it dramatically increases your DPS
damage.
At low levels it doubles it. That probably, at like high levels it's probably increases it by 25%, something like that.
Tapers off, but, yeah.
Yeah, but the end result is that as long as you keep moving, it allows you to kind of, do defense by offense, out DPS enemies before they have a chance to hit you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's not going to protect you from like projectiles or traps. So you have to be going as fast as you possibly can while not messing up.
Yeah, they do. They take a page out of like the Doom book where they have the enemies that fire from you, even if you're not in the same room as them, still force you to like keep moving to get to them to attack them. They also added a new mechanic in that they didn't have in the alpha that they have in this one, where weapons will have possibly two colors to them. So, mm-hmm. Like the given turret might be like 2/3 of the way purple, but then also have like a sliver of red in it. So if you upgrade red, it'll slightly buff that as well, in addition to, yeah. So that was something that was new.
Yeah. And they've added a lot of a lot more story line to it. Okay. There's a couple more NPCs which are kind of entertaining, and then you'll periodically find kind of lore items that you can inspect that give some background on the events that are going on.
They'll have like notes from like the prison master to his guards or something. I don't know what to make of some of those, because a lot of them are kind of weird. Like there's like one secret area you go to where there's like, it's like a tunnel. And it's like, oh, maybe a kid could fit through it. And then it's like, and then it doesn't follow up on it ever. It's like, oh, okay. Can I get a kid or something? Or like, a lot of weird things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm totally on the same page. I'm not quite sure what's up with that. There's there's a number of instances where it breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah.
For example, if you get far enough, you can eventually find a guy that will reforge your gear and basically reroll the random stats.
Yeah.
And he's using a grindstone, and if you inspect it, he comments that it would be how the hell are you going to reforge a bow or a bomb with a grindstone, just shoddy game design.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you had gotten that far too. So I've gotten to the like right past the Black Bridge or whatever. Okay. Previous runs, I've gotten past that, but I haven't got that gotten past that level on 1.0 yet.
Yeah, so I just like shortly before we started recording, got to got past the clock tower to like the high castle, which I think is like the start of the last stage.
Okay.
Although one of the kind of weird things about the game is, you know, there's the branching Metroidvania paths, but they. A lot of them they kind of cycle. So, you know, they all eventually lead to the same, you know, final boss. And yeah. Similarly, like depending on them, on how you go, I think you'll like, experience certain stages in different orders and stuff.
Okay. Is that true? I guess I only know it up to a certain point. I haven't seen stages go out of order, but I know like a lot of times like it tunnels back so that like there's like certain levels that you kind of have to go through. Like Black Bridge, I think you have to go through on every branch that you take. But
yeah, maybe I think it might be more of like their way of implementing skipping levels.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say one thing that I do feel like, you know, one of the interesting things is this definitely, you know, has some influence from the Soulsborne series. And it's interesting, you know, whenever you play one of these games, looking at like, you know, what are aspects that either do or do not work when kind of taken in isolation or abstracted, you know, out. And I think one of the interesting things that doesn't completely work on this one is, you know, when you die, you lose all of the cells, which are kind of your upgrade points and any unlocks of new equipment that you've found since the last level you completed.
Yeah.
And I feel like the flaw in that is that what made that workable for like Dark Souls was the fact that it was a choice to press forward. So once you found something good, you could choose to immediately go back to a bonfire. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this, often like if I'm having a good run and like get farther than I normally do, the most likely result, because you know, when you get farther, the game gets more difficult, is that I die and like earn nothing for having gotten farther.
Yeah. I kind of see the way it affects the gameplay is like on longer levels, like the ossuary is the one I'm thinking of, is if you get a bunch of like dead cells early on in the map, then it kind of puts more pressure. It's like, all right, I can't fuck up. I need to get to the end of the level so I can actually spend these and make it valuable. But I agree that like, it's much more limited how they use it in this game versus something like Dark Souls, where it's not as like high pressure in this game. It doesn't matter. Even if you lose, it's not a big deal. Like you can just go on another run.
Sure.
Yeah. I do like the addition. They added legendary weapons with 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only gotten one of them, but it was like heads and shoulders above any of the other weapons that I had at that level. And then similar with the forge that you can unlock that you were mentioning before, you can increase the probability of like getting legendary weapon drops. And that's like a permanent upgrade. So that was kind of like an interesting addition that I hadn't seen. So.
Although it seems like the ability to upgrade to get that is just so end level, so end game as to be almost meaningless. Because yeah. It's like to get any, at least as far as I can tell, in order to get any upgrade to your chance, you have to invest 1,000 cells.
Yeah,
which I don't know exactly, but like, you know, I've played, you know, a number of hours, say, you know, I don't know, at least say 5-6 hours, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I've maybe spent like 200 cells, 300, something like that.
Yeah,
that's actually probably even a pretty conservative estimate.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, that's one thing that I feel like is a little odd.
Far out there, yeah.
I know. Like I would say, and part of this is probably maybe me not entirely being the target market, but I personally think it would be helped by having more permanent progression.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough balance to walk.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Man, you guys are making me want Dead Cells a lot right now.
Yeah,
It's
that's how
a
I
good
played this
game.
entire weekend.
Yeah, it's very tempting, 'cause, because it's on the Switch, and that is the perfect way to play these kinds of things, so.
I'm not sure if this is now all the time or not, but it definitely works with a PS4 controller. I don't
Yeah.
know if that's just standard or if only certain games work with PS4 as opposed to Xbox controllers.
So I can speak to this a little bit. I don't well so I downloaded the program. It's like DS4, I think, to run a PlayStation 4 on PC games, and that will make your controller work for like most any game that you have.
Okay.
But I that's how I was, because I use the PlayStation controller over an Xbox because the controls are better for it, because you need to use all the bumpers, I think.
Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah.
Nice. Anything else, Ben?
Yeah, I got two other small things. I won't talk long about them. I started playing Divinity: Original Sin 2 with one of my friends back in Cincinnati, Max,
Nice.
because he picked up the game. So I'm doing another run on that. So I think I have three runs going right now, two-player runs and one solo run. That game's still pretty fun to play with multiplayer, though. I think I found like a good class to play, and I haven't seen little argument to go away from it. I'm still lone wolfing summoner, and like I still don't see an argument to go away from that. I've like of all the other classes that I've seen so far. So I'd be interested to know if you guys have any like really good builds, if you guys have experience with that game. But anyway.
Yeah, I tried playing like a sneak up and stab from behind rogue, and it just did not work out very well. I did multiplayer, and unfortunately the person I was playing with had kind of this like create area of effect damage that I kept on getting caught and stunned in. Just did not work very well.
Yeah, that could be like a bad pairing, but yeah, I tried doing a rogue, and I think I tried doing an archer at one point for some of my initial run-throughs, but yeah, I didn't see it didn't seem as well balanced. Like, it didn't seem like they're putting out as much damage as other classes. Anyway, the other game that I've been playing is I've been continuing to play Octopath Traveler. I'm still at like around the level 3, level 4 quests for party members. There's a couple like roadblocks that I'm at right now, so I can't remember where I was at before, but I can beat some of the characters' quests, but there's I think one quest in particular where the boss, like, I don't know how I can beat him. There was one boss that I beat like this last week, but it was just like such an annoying boss. So again, this I'm turning. I feel like I'm this is my like Jala game where I'm starting to like hate play the game and just complain about it every week maybe. Or flip a table for it every week. But there's like one boss where, and I think, I mean, admittedly, it could just be bad luck, but like, so if you, the way the system works is if every character has a weakness, and it has a number. So if you attack them with their whatever the weakness is that many times, it breaks them. And so they're kind of stunned for 1 to 2 rounds, depending upon when you do it.
Okay.
And so there's one boss where when you do this, he has two guards. And the guard's immediate next move is to give him, I think it's like smell insults or whatever, or sulfur assaults or something like this, whatever the fantasy equivalent is, where it revives him and he has full shield.
What the
And
fuck?
so, yeah, very annoying. And then on top of that, the first move of the boss is to do this move that locks like three of his weaknesses, so those are no longer weaknesses for him. And the three happen to be the only moves that I had against them, and the other ones are like more like obscure ones, like I think an axe attack and a dark attack, which I don't have in my party. And so it was just a very frustrating boss fight. I eventually was able to get it so I could stun the two guards and stun the boss before they could attack, but it was just like Yeah, it was very, very frustrating.
Yeah, the boss looks directly at you and says, oh, hi, your build is invalid.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is it's like, I don't, you know, again, I always go back and think of, like, XCOM, where it's like, each of, like, the villains that they introduce or the new mechanics or whatever make you, like, rethink the gameplay, like, in a meaningful way and make you find, like, a new way around it. Whereas, like, this is just kind of like, we're going to make this harder and, like, but there's not really a way for you to, like, get around. Like, the only thing is you can max min and you can just, like, do better damage output per second, but, like, there's not, like, a meaningful way to, like, overcome this challenge.
Yeah. It's the distinction between, can I think around this or do I have to, or is this just adding extra steps for me to... to endeavor upon.
Yeah, is this adding more, like, minutes to the fight that I need to grind through in order to win? And it definitely feels like the latter. So I won't go too far into that. I think I'll stop there with talking about it. I still, like, want to beat the game or resolve the game, or at least beat it for some of the people. But I don't know if I'll get there or not, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Definitely playing Dead Cells was a lot more fun than playing that. Maybe I need to just switch over and play No Man's Sky with Dennis and feel happy about the games that I'm playing. So.
Oh,
come to the light side?
Yeah, lots of suns. Lots of suns there.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
So mostly, you know, Dead Cells. Played a little bit more Fallout 4.
Okay.
You know, only big takeaway on it is I've become a little disappointed in the degree to which your companions don't interact that much with the story and dialogue and stuff like that, and similarly that the story tends to ignore them or ignore the things you've done in situations that don't make sense. Most notably, when, one of the companions is basically a synth and is more or less like going Terminator style, where he's, very old character. So a lot of like the fake skin and stuff like that has, you know, worn away over time, and you can, you know, straight up see that he's a robot. And so it's like, it's obvious that he's a synth. And then I, I go to join the railroad, and there's dialogues where they're like, do you even know what a synth is?
This is awkward.
Similarly, like, they're like, yeah, and, you know, he's from all appearances, like, the only synth in the Commonwealth, and therefore, presumably, the Fallout world that's, like, openly a synth, and people are okay with that.
Right.
And so, presumably, all of the characters would recognize him and know who he is.
He would have a reputation.
Right. And meanwhile, you're going through all these hoops to be like, how do we know you really care about this synth? So it's like, couldn't my partner just be like, hey,
I've got references.
yeah, exactly. So it's just, stuff like that. And I was trying to think, like, I remember for example, in Mass Effect, you know, your companions were fairly active in, like, your dialogue trees and, you know, interacting with the things you're doing, stuff like that, right?
In Fallout 3 in New Vegas, or?
No, in Mass Effect.
In Mass Effect.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, I was trying to think, like, am I being unrealistic in, the degree to which I wish they would have had, like, the different perspectives of your companions be represented in these various quests?
I can speak to, like, Knights of the Old Republic being, like, yes. Like, if they would make a comment about a droid and you had a droid in your party, they would say something about it. But...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Mass Effect, that would happen occasionally, but because you had so many characters, most of the time that was addressed in kind of debriefs and conversations between missions more than a bunch of other stuff. The exception being that if you were on a particular character's kind of loyalty quest or their recruitment quest, then they would be far more involved in it.
Sure. Okay. And so, I mean, I guess that's, you know, at least give some, you know, some kind of precedent or whatever. But yeah, I still feel like, you know, there's a number of situations where it seems like they could have done a lot with it and just kind of don't. And I feel like it's especially too bad because, you know, a number of the characters, like, you know, I feel like as much as I don't like a lot of the difference between, you know, this versus like the Obsidian approach, one of its strengths is I'd say it's a much more legitimately serious game. And I feel like one of the aspects of that is if you, for example, like pull up a lot of the companions, say like wiki entries and look at, you know, what you know, increases or decreases their you know, reputation with you. I forget what they call it, but it's a lot of them don't actually make sense, by which I mean like they're not actually rational like belief structures that these characters are necessarily operating under.
Okay.
Which, you know,
I think like normal human beings,
yeah. Right? Exactly.
So it's so very strange for us to be irrational.
Right. Right. Exactly. So for example, like, Piper, who's, the kind of reporter, is borderline, paranoid about like the threat that the synths, you know, represent to people, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, really likes Nick, who's the guy who's obviously a synth, and really likes you helping the railroad. Mm. And I feel like it could have been interesting for like the characters to, you know, have to wrestle with some of that, you know, like, you know, what do these, you know, different conflicts say about, you know, my belief system and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so what it sounds like you're saying is less about rationality and more about like, oh, what their personal economy for reputation seems to be completely unmoored from the way they are written and kind of the role that they occupy in the story.
Well, and I'd say, though, I think kind of like, you know, Des alluded to, I think, though, in a way that's realistic to people.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know, not to go too much into it, but, and I don't think there's any characters that are quite like this, but, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you'll experience, you know, meet sometimes people that are like, say, like straight up racist that have like black friends that they really legitimately like.
And they will remind you of that fact.
Well,
yeah.
Well, but I'm not saying that so much as saying like the truth of the matter is that like, you know, people's belief systems often aren't entirely logically consistent, and that's interesting, and they don't really go do anything with that.
Yeah. So it's never remarked upon. It's never that this reporter character fears the threat that synths represent, but over the course of the story, over the course of your reputation with her, if you kind of fill her with those particular kinds of points, then she comes around and says like, oh yeah, I was prejudiced before. Like I just didn't understand because I wasn't exposed. This is a good cause and I'm happy you're helping it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
weird.
So yeah, I mean, and I say that, you know, a lot of that kind of coming from, you know, sort of I'm, you know, doing analysis of the game or, you know, whatever. So I'm talking about the things that are kind of weak, but like, I think the game's a good game. Like I am very much enjoying it. So I want to make sure I say that. Like,
yeah. I think that's coming through.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
good stuff. Nice. But yeah, that's pretty much been it for me this week.
Cool. Dead Cells and Fallout 4. We're getting up on time. So that makes it good that I have very little to speak about. I've not picked up Mega Man X7 again. I intend to. It just hasn't happened because I've been very busy, obviously, with personal things. Also, I have played and streamed Silent Hill 3, but I have spoken at length about that and why it is a masterwork. And people can just go watch that if they want to.
What are your thoughts on 3 versus 2?
I think that two is a more monumental work, and two is definitely like just more successful as a self-contained, you know, just masterwork of story. I think that two is so good that you almost have to exclude it out of any kind of analysis of the other games, because I think that it can be used as a cudgel against any positive thing about any of the other games. I think that three is a more proper sequel to the original Silent Hill. You know, it doesn't just return to the setting, but it logically follows upon the story, and, you know, weirdly enough, it feels necessary. It doesn't feel like the common insult lodged at this kind of thing would be fan fiction. You know, it doesn't feel like they're grasping at straws. You know, it deals with characters and concepts, you know, and consequences that develop in the time between the original Silent Hill and Silent Hill 3. I think that 3 is far more mechanically sound. And also, weirdly enough, I think that it has higher highs in terms of level design and area design, specifically visual design, than 2 has, whereas 2 is more of a triumph of atmosphere than anything else. And also 3, I think, is scarier than 2, whereas 2 is far more unsettling on a it deals with kind of the oppressive horror of melancholy. More so than 3 does, getting back to a sense of body horror and dispossession.
This is all reminding me that I believe I still have your physical copy of Silent Hill 1 on disc. So if you've ever wondered where that is,
that's absolutely true. I think you've had that for 6 years, Dennis.
Oh my gosh. How have you let that happen, Cole?
I have a digital copy of Silent Hill 1. Yeah. So there's that. I talked about 3 more than I intended to, but the one game that I want to talk about, and this is more of a recommendation for everybody, if you are able to check out the iOS or mobile game, Hold Down.
Wait, what is that?
I saw this name, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So enlighten me.
Okay, so Hold Down, it is a new game by the team that did Rimmed Capsule. Ben, you'll recognize that. I believe you played it. It is like an abstract, almost like space station sim kind of thing, where you're like building up platforms and managing their resources and stuff. It's spelled in a weird way. It's like RYMDKAPSL.
I vaguely remember this. Yeah, and you choose like basically what buildings you pick on or something like that, and they have different functions.
Yeah, this is far more simple, to the point where I feel like if Hold Down was a little bit more involved and a little bit more and just honestly lengthy, I would say that it is a successor to Peggle in a lot of ways. So what you're doing is you are trying to bounce balls off of little blocks that are mostly shaped like Tetris blocks. As you are kind of going down this long kind of tunnel. This is a very difficult game to describe because it is mostly about the feel more so than what you are doing. It's 2D, you know, you like your balls start out in the very top of the screen between each throw,
and then your balls drop.
Yes, well, you throw them. It's a very forceful.
Can you spell the game, by the way?
Hold Down, HOLEDOWN.
Okay. All right. Sorry. It's just Google is not turning up anything for this. So, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned about it on Polygon, which talked about it like, oh, this is the hot new thing or whatever. Between each throw, the blocks kind of advance upward. And each block kind of has a little health, count, you know, that ticks down once every time a ball hits it. The trick of this is it is entirely about managing the angles of your bounces to kind of set up these very long chains of ricochets, and the balls speed up as they bounce around which makes it very satisfying. So like you'll watch and you will plan out a move where like, okay, I'm going to fire at this block. And I know that they're going to bounce. So they're going to bounce away after they hit it, but I'm going to get rid of this block that is posing an immediate threat to me. And after that it is going to ricochet down, into kind of a self-contained box, you know, through a hole at the bottom of these, and they're just going to bounce around in there and soften everything up. If you've played Arkanoid or Breakout and you know the mm-hmm. absolutely wonderful feeling of breaking through the top row and having the ball just kind of bounce around up there and take out all the blocks from the top without you really having to do anything, that is exactly what this game is all about. It is all about that feeling.
All right. Can I interject with something?
Yes.
There's a game that came out like a year or two ago called BB Tan. That was it was exactly like this, but it had like mods and stuff that was like goofy over the top things. Like you could fire triangles instead of those. You could fire like the sun. You could fire like, I don't know. It was weird. But yeah.
Oh, I had no idea that this was a clone of something. I literally just learned about it from that article.
Everything is a clone of something.
Yeah.
That game was very addictive as well. So I understand liking this game.
Yeah. And as you go, you get these crystals that let you get unlocks. And the final stage that you get is just an unlimited mode. All of the stages are randomly generated, but their difficulty is kind of determined by density of blocks, but also the health of the blocks. Mm-hmm. or just, you know, how durable they are. And yeah, it is a real snack of a game. Once you pop, you cannot stop. I'm not advertising. I'm just talking about how much time I've lost to this thing just by like, oh, well, I'll just play this until this podcast episode is over. Well, there's a new episode that's already started, so I'm going to do this. It is a very it is a compulsion. Yeah, hold down.
Luckily, it is quite possibly the most un-search engine optimized game ever.
it's all one word. Hold down.
It was hard to find.
Oh, okay.
I just found it. Oh, okay. I've seen this around.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. It's also super cute.
So are the little pill things, are you shooting those?
Yeah, well, those are little balls. They look like pills because they're in motion. The animation and kind of the bounce and anticipation on these is really well done, as is the sound design.
Nice.
Yeah, it's real cool. I like it quite a bit. And that's everything. So how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Do you guys want to do zippers this week? Or?
No, Jaw's not here, so we have to.
Don't, she'll come after us.
Yeah, butt buttons.
But credit.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this. This has been level number 254. We appreciate you taking the time. Nothing so much to promote at this very moment. However, if you would like to do the usual things like tell your friends and come back next week and consider leaving us a rating or review, that would be greatly appreciated. I really can't think of anything I want to play up right now. Might be something in the future, but who knows? Am I forgetting anything, guys?
I don't think so.
Okay. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I've been David Meismith, just places. Currently in New York.
At New York. I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelby on Twitch.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. Okay. I have two. I have Denbis and Barkmuter.
Wait, yes. What's the second one?
Barkmuter.
Right. So I had that, and at least my spelling of it was
Light over the U. Yeah.
One sec. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. single word?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also had TPster, however we pronounce that.
Yeah, TPSTR. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like RR just to be safe.
Okay. Yep.
I had Subconscious Segue. Cyber Jellyfish. And I feel like this was something Ben said, and I got sidetracked halfway through writing it down, so I'm not sure if I quote it exactly right, but something along the lines of, maybe I need to just enjoy a game.
I think it was, maybe I need to play No Man's Sky with Dennis and be happy.
Okay.
That's that is too long. Maybe I'm going to shorten that to maybe I need to just be happy.
MTBDT, whatever, yeah.
Okay, Dennis?
I had Bark Muter.
Okay.
Spelled exactly as we described with an umlaut over the U, one word. And then I have a unique train wreck.
Okay.
I totally missed the Bark Muter thing because I was busy muting my microphone and stressing out. I had Denbis. I had Subconscious Segue. I had Fly Under the Radio because somebody, I think David said instead of Fly Under the Radar, and I really liked it. Because
yeah, that is very good.
Oh, yeah, I remember
flew
that.
Under the radar. And then I also had Amazon Subprime, but I don't think that'll make it because that's too corporate.
So it sounds like Bark Muter is the thing. Ben, for your edification, you were expertly muting the dog's barks. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said Bark Muter sounds like a German beer name. So I think that's funny. Any opposition to Bark Muter?
No,
I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, sorry about me disappearing in the middle there. Somebody rang my doorbell and it was my downstairs neighbors introducing themselves at 9:45 in the evening.
Did they do it by blowing smoke in your face?
No.
All right. They're nice.
They're very nice. I think the person that I talked with was somebody who was helping her move. It's an older woman. Yeah. So
to be clear,
okay,
I want to say that
I'm going to be gone in a second.
Being a smoker does not make you a bad person.
No,
but smoking
no.
inside and making you affect like other people's areas. That's not great.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to go. Take care, everybody.
All right. Yeah. Have a good night.
Take care. Bye.
Have a good week, guys. See ya.